Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the NBCSports.com College Basketball Talk Podcast. It is Tuesday night, April 28th. This normally would be a run it back podcast that we were going to record, but since a whole bunch of stuff happened over the course of the last two or three days in the world of college basketball, I thought that it was prudent for us to discuss some of that before we dive into another run it back podcast. The great thing about the run it back pods is that we have so much time to kill and they are evergreen, so we can always talk about them and always do them at any given point in time. They'll never get stale, but the content and the topics that I'm going to discuss today with Bobby Regan, the host of the Fundamentally Sound podcast, and apparently a Big J journalist that's out here scooping Shams Charania. We'll get to that. Regs, what's going on, man? How you doing?
We're hanging in, man. We're hanging in. Tomorrow's donut day. We're picking up some donuts from a new place. So we have that on the schedule, which we're looking forward to since we had to order them on Sunday. So it's been a big 2 days of wait in the Regan household where my wife and I are literally like, all right, 8:30 tomorrow morning, donut pickup day.
Yeah, dude.
That's where we're at in quarantine.
You want to know where I'm at in quarantine? I'm not proud of what I'm about to say, I'm going to say it. You want to know where I'm at in quarantine? We made cupcakes on Sunday afternoon. I had anything to do with it. It was my wife and my son made cupcakes on Sunday afternoon, and there was a little bit of leftover frosting, and I have a little bit of vanilla ice cream in the freezer, and I put the frosting from the cupcakes on the ice cream because I didn't have anything else. Like, we didn't have chocolate sauce. We didn't have sprinkles. I had nothing else, and it was just plain vanilla ice cream, so I had to put something on the ice cream, and I went with cupcake frosting. That's where I am in life. That's where I am in quarantine.
I've said on here before, I've already had lasagna for breakfast one day. I had mac and cheese for lunch and dinner one day. And I have no idea what day it is.
Yeah. The first thing that I did before I started recording, I said, I know. Tuesday, right? Is it Tuesday? Yeah, it's Tuesday. So
what's funny is I'm busy now with work Wednesday, Friday, Saturday. So I know those days. And every day is irrelevant. There's no such thing as a weekend, weekday anymore. But it's like Monday, Tuesday, you could tell me. I had to think so many times today. I was like, wait, what day is today? Especially when it's Tuesday, because Wednesday I have to take the trash out. So that's what I know too. And I'm like, do I have to take the trash out?
That is literally what my entire schedule is built around. I got to get it out on Wednesday, Wednesday evening. Because the thing that's frustrating is, so our recycling guys, right, they're always here at 7 a.m. every other Tuesday morning. Okay. Every single time they're supposed to be here, they're like we must be the first neighborhood on their route because they're always here at 7 a.m. But the trash guys, you never know. Like sometimes the trash guys are like 6:30 in the morning and like I get woken up by them, by like the sound of the trash can driving by on the street picking up the people's trash. Sometimes they're here at 7 o'clock at night. You just never know. So it's like either do I just kind of risk it and get it out the night before and hope that like no raccoons or like any kind of animal gets into the trash and spreads it all over my lawn because that's happened before. Or do I wait until the morning to get it out on the off chance that maybe, just maybe, I will be too late. And look, now that everybody is in the house 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, like we go through a lot of trash. We got one trash can. And we fill that sucker up every week. So if I miss a week because these trash guys like are on such a weird schedule, then like I'm going to have literal bags of garbage piling up in my garage.
We were that house, 3 weeks ago when it was, where we had recycling. Our recycling is every other Thursday. Trash is every Thursday. So we bring everything out. We had like the giant, Chewy box and Amazon boxes and all that stuff. and we're throwing our stuff in there. Had to mow the grass, emptied the grass. I got grass in the trash, all that stuff. Tornado hit Cincinnati that night, and everything's just thrown about. Anyways, we went on a walk with the dog and the kid the next day, and I was like, I still drink like orange Gatorade because I'm a child. I'm 12 years old. And I was like, orange Gatorade, White Claw, and like a beer that only I would have were thrown. Literally, we live on one corner. It was on the complete other corner down the road. And I looked at my wife. I was like, pretty sure that's ours, huh? She's like, yeah, let's just keep walking.
Yeah, so we had a storm like that once. That it wasn't a tornado, but it was a huge rainstorm. And I kind of live like there's like a downhill slope, and the curve kind of comes around down the hill.
Yep.
So whenever it really rains, like you get all that water rushing downhill right in the curve, so it kind of builds up and whips around and gets going really fast right in front of my house. And I've had bags of like the grass clippings when I cut the grass get carried away by the water on the side of the road when they have bad storms. And that happened once, and it all got built up down the street right behind this guy's car, who, by the way, his license plate, how about this, Riggs? It's SCM 8HG. So his license plate looks like it says scumbag.
Oh, that's even better.
Every time I walk by his car, like, that can't be intentional.
No. It's probably like initials and like a wedding anniversary or something like that.
He probably didn't even realize it. But yeah, so his car had like five bags of grass clippings put up right behind it.
And there's nothing worse than wet grass.
No, it's the worst.
It's the worst.
It's the absolute worst.
And all I don't know about you. Go ahead.
No,
I was just getting on to more quarantine life talk that nobody really cares about.
No, that I think it's way more interesting. I would much rather talk about this than talk about college basketball.
I was going to say it's a little different for you because you have two kids. I only have one. So we're still on the 2-on-1 fast break. And I reverted back to being a kid. I sleep so late now. I literally get woken up every morning now whenever my kid is sitting in his high chair screaming, ready for me to come out. It's like 8:20 in the morning. I don't know what life is going to be like when quarantine is over, and I'm not sleeping till like 8:30 in the morning every day.
Yeah, we kind of have a nice little system where my wife and I rotate who does breakfast and who sleeps in a little bit.
Just my wife for us.
Yeah, so like every other day we switch. I need to. Like, my wife's getting killed at work. She's up super late, and like, I don't even have an excuse anymore. Like, I'm working on a draft profile of LaMelo Ball. So I'm watching every single game that he played in Australia, and I think it's 13 games in total when you include the preseason. And I think I'm through like 9.5, and I got to get through the rest of them. And it's not as like when I'm rolling through a college basketball game on Synergy, like it's 30 second shot clocks. I have the timing down pat. So with the hotkeys, I can get through them in probably 28 to 30 minutes, but it's different when you're only watching the minutes where LaMelo Ball is on the floor. It's also a 24 second shot clock. And it's also like, you have to make sure you actually are kind of like breaking down every plays. So it gets really labor intensive to get through. And that's a long way of saying, like, the only reason that I have to be up late at this point is to watch a LaMelo Ball film. And I'll tell you what, that's not a great reason to stay up late when you were up at 6 o'clock in the morning and had to chase around two kids all day. So I've been falling asleep early. So I do kind of feel bad and feel like it's my duty as a husband to chip in and let my wife sleep in every other day.
I stay up late playing video games.
Let me be clear. Every other day. Every other day. We're in this together.
Yeah, I stay up late playing video games. And then so like, I'm literally just a child.
That's precisely the reason why I have not plugged in my Xbox I don't even have the Xbox? Is it Xbox Live? What is it called?
I don't know. I'm a PlayStation guy.
Whatever the internet connection thing is, I haven't gotten that set up in the new house yet, specifically for that reason. Because I know that I would be up until like 3 a.m. every night.
Oh, it's so easy. Like, I just put on either like my YouTube playlist, Spotify playlist, or podcast. Next thing I know, it's like two hours in.
Yeah. Like, and you're like, oh wow, it's 2:30 in the morning.
And I'm wide awake. Sleep.
Yes. Yeah. All right. So we have plenty of stuff to talk about in the world of college basketball. We are going to talk about Deshaun Nix's decision to decommit from UCLA and go to the G League Prospect Pathway Program. We are going to talk about Wake Forest finally firing Danny Manning in the middle of a pandemic. But before we do that, I want to talk about Tashaun Hightower. And if you guys don't know who Tashaun Hightower is, he was the leading scorer at Tulane this past season. He declared for the draft on April 18th, 10 days after, allegedly, he was involved in a shooting that resulted in a 24-year-old man being killed in Stockbridge, Georgia. Tashaun Hightower is a native of Lithonia, which is basically like Atlanta suburbs, more or less. What appears, I guess what happened was this incident was on April 8th. One of his friends got into a fight with the man that ended up dying. Allegedly, he was pistol whipped. The kid that was pistol whipped left the residence where the fight happened, went back and got Tashaun Hightower, Tashaun Hightower's brother, and three other guys that he was friends with. They go to the house of the person where they got in the fight. The kid that pistol whipped one of Tashaun Hightower's friends comes out with a gun, and then allegedly someone from that group fired on him, shooting him and killing him. Tashaun Hightower was arrested for murder. He was arrested for aggravated assault. He was arrested for battery. He was arrested for and charged with, I should say, is probably the technical legal term, and charged with possession of a firearm during the commission of a felony, along with four of the other five guys that were involved in this incident. One of them is still at large. They turned themselves in. Tashaun Hightower and his brother Jeffrey turned themselves in on April 25th, 17 days after the incident, 17 days after the crime, and a week after Hightower actually declared for the NBA draft, knowing that all of this was hanging over his head. He's been dismissed from Tulane, and his lawyer, all the stuff that I talked about with that incident came from an arrest warrant that was obtained by the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and his lawyer spoke with ESPN and said basically Tashaun's brother was the one that pulled the trigger, and that they believe that it was in self-defense because the man that was killed came out of his house with a gun in his hand and pointed it at them. And they are invoking the Stand Your Ground law. So it sounds like there is a little bit of legal leeway either way. I don't really want to dive into the case too much because I feel like it's just kind of straightforward in a sense, right? Like the kid was involved in a shooting where somebody died. You have to dismiss him from the program regardless of however that case plays out. It's tragic regardless of whether you are looking at this from the situation of the kid that was killed because his life is over. It's tragic if you look at it from the position of all the other, all the people that were involved in this, because what it's basically going to come down to is they are either going to be found guilty of murder, which, you know, they're kind of admitting that it happened and they were involved in that shooting, or they are going to have their names ruined because no one's going to talk about the fact that this this incident ended up going away, right? Like once Tashaun Hightower is dismissed from Tulane, he's no longer newsworthy and all that relevant. It's not going to get the kind of viral treatment that it did. I mean, he was on TMZ. He was on the Daily Mail. So regardless of what happens, like either he is guilty of murder or, you know, his life is completely ruined because of an incident that he was involved in. What I think is what I want to talk about here, and I think has a little bit more connection to the actual world of college basketball, is that this is kind of like the worst case scenario. I think that's pretty clear. But there are a lot of coaches that are worried about the situations that their players have to go back to. And what I mean by it is this: Tashaun Hightower was supposed to be in class. You know, he was supposed to be in like history or a business class or whatever classes he was taking. He was not supposed to be at home. He was not supposed to be in Stockbridge, Georgia. He was not supposed to be in a situation where he was involved when someone was trying to go retaliate because he got pistol whipped, right? He was not supposed to be involved in a place where he was shooting. He was supposed to be on campus. He was supposed to be at school. And I'm sure that he is not the only person and the only player that has been, because of the coronavirus and because of all these schools shutting down, he's not the only player that has to go back home to a situation that is probably not the best situation. And it's something that I didn't really think about when all of this stuff kind of first started happening, Reeves. And I'm just kind of how concerned, like, how much of an issue do you think this is going to end up being? Not just, you know, guys getting in trouble, but not having the kind of like discipline necessary to be able to stay up with their grades, not having the kind of home situation that will allow them to be able to stay in shape or eat well, or to avoid, you know, going out and partying every single night. I think that this is going to have a bigger impact on kind of the state of college basketball and all the stuff gets going again than maybe people realize.
To a degree, for every reason that you said, or even if these guys, you know, who are borderline going to the draft, whether or not they'll be working out instead of being in class, however you look at it, these things just aren't happening, right? So there is definitely the concern of what are they doing? Are they staying in shape, in basketball shape? Because, I mean, look at the two of us, and we're not even athletes. That's by far the toughest thing, right? When you're out of a routine, you start eating like crap. You start just sitting around. You're playing video games at 3 in the morning. So that's especially true when you're like a 19-year-old kid, like, and you're just sitting back at mom and dad's house. Like, that's, it's the easiest thing in the world to fall back into. So that is definitely a concern. You know, just how can you stay in shape, in basketball shape? Take away, you know, any trouble or anything like that. How do you stay in basketball shape when you are confined to essentially just going for a run around the neighborhood at most? I do wonder how that's going to end up playing into next season, you know, whenever we see basketball come back. As for the partying, getting in trouble, I don't know if that's more of a concern than other years, because either they come from this environment where they could be partying, you know, when they're coming out of high school, JUCO, whatever it might be, or any other break, right? Like, not even any break. This could happen on campus too. Like, if anything, when you're on campus, and I know that you have, you know, coaching staffs and spies and all that stuff to kind of keep an eye on these kids, but when you're a Division I athlete, you're the cock of the walk at any university you're at, right? Like, it doesn't matter. So you can go to any party you want. You can go to almost any bar you want. You can go to any house party you want. You can do pretty much whatever you want if you want to. You can always find a way to get out. Like, let's not act like it's locked down 24/7 for these guys in season or anything like that. You can find a way. Sure, you might end up running suicides at 4 a.m. as punishment for it, but you can find a way to party if you want to party. I'm not as concerned about that. I'm honestly more concerned, if that's even lack of the better word, of how do you keep these guys in just a routine for basketball?
Yeah. First and foremost, can we go back to cock of the walk? Like, is that a thing?
You've never heard of that?
Cock of the walk? That's a saying?
Yeah.
I don't think that's a real saying. I think
yes, it made is. That up. No.
Cock of the walk. Well, if it is, then it's something I'm going to have to start saying, because cock of the walk sounds real good.
The leader in a group, especially one with a conceited, domineering manner.
Okay, the cock of the walk. You're right, Reeves. You got that one right. I hear what you're saying. I think the biggest thing is just kind of like the structure.
Yeah.
You know, we all struggle with not, like, if you don't have a deadline, at least for me, I don't know how it is for you, Reeves, but if I don't have a strict deadline, it's very hard for me to self-motivate and get to the point where it's like, yeah, okay, I'm going to sit here. I'm going to grind all this LaMelo Ball film. I'm going to cut all that video that I need to cut. I'm going to edit it all. I'm going to write the column that I need to write, and I'm going to have it ready to go in like 24 hours. It's just, I do it mentally.
I give myself mental deadlines where I'm like, okay, I want to do 8 blogs today. I need to have one blog done at 9:30, 10:30, 11:30 this time. So I know in my head, I need to do this amount of research. I need to have this prepared because I need this blog to be published at this time. So I'm like you, where I need that structure.
Yeah. So when you don't have that, I don't know how. I mean, like, when you don't have that deadline, you don't have that reason why you have to pay attention. You don't have. Right. You have to go to class and pay attention, because if you're sitting there and talking through class, people are going to realize you don't. You know, with online classes, like, you don't even really have to pay attention. You could cheat on it. You could do whatever. You don't have to have people staring down staring you down and making sure that you're actually putting in the work and doing the things that you need to do to stay up on your grades.
Right.
I think that is a concern. But to me, more than anything else, it's like, you know, we hear during this quarantine and this lockdown, you've heard a lot about how domestic abuse is going up and the child abuse is going up because you have all these situations where people in marriages or in relationships that aren't working out well, or kids that come from unstable homes with parents that maybe are not fit to be parents in that way. They can't leave. They can't escape. And there's a lot of athletes and not just athletes. There's a lot of students. There's a lot of college basketball players that come from situations where the sport is their escape. The scholarship is their escape. School is their escape. That's the way that they're able to get away from what ends up being a bad home situation for them. Whether that means they have like an abusive father or an absentee mom, or they come from a place that's really, really poor like that. There's a lot of kids that are probably back in a situation with no end in sight. That is not a great situation for them. And that's before you factor in that there are people that are like losing their jobs, legitimate, like we're going to have a major economic downturn because all these people keep losing their jobs. You know, that, what is it? 26 million to file for unemployment now,
something like that, including Tupac Shakur.
Yeah. Apparently now imagine that you're in that situation where things are already tough. You already are making a lot of money, and now you're coming home and you have to deal with the fact that like maybe your parents got laid off and they don't have a job. Like, what do you do in that situation?
Or the other way, they pick up a second job because they're getting a salary reduction. And now they're out of the house 20 hours a day and you're just left home alone.
And exposed to the virus more. So those are the situations. And then what about like the international kids? You know, we hear about all, we talked about this last night off the air, Riggs. But what about the kids that, you know, we hear about all these guys that are brought over from Africa and brought over from South Sudan and run through handlers that are super sketchy. There was a 60 Minutes piece on it recently. You know, I think Sports Illustrated has done a deep dive. Like, there's a lot of reporting that is done on this and how like some of these kids are brought over by shady handlers who may or may not actually care about them once they realize that they can't profit off of these guys, because just because you're a 7-footer from South Sudan doesn't mean that you're going to end up being the next NBA superstar. Right. So what happens to the kids that are now not able to go to school, but they don't have like a family structure here? They don't have a family base here. They don't have, anywhere they can go back to that's not actually on campus. And those handlers decide, hey, you know what? I don't want to have to pay for room and board for these 7 kids that I brought to this country to play basketball while they are not able to go to school. So I think there are a lot of...
See, that's where it sucks, and I completely understand it. I don't want people to think I'm being like anti-rulings here or anything like that. That's where it sucks that colleges forced all these kids to like leave where they were living. If you're on campus, a lot of these student athletes live on campus, so that at least would eliminate part of this problem to a degree where, hey, they're still in their comfort zone of college. They're still in their bed that they've slept in for the last however many months. Again, I completely get it. I'm not sitting here saying that, you know, colleges open up tomorrow or anything like that. It's just one of those where I wish that they could have found a way to say, and I don't even know if it was possible. Again, I'm just thinking.
But you
get what I'm saying, you're quarantined with roommates. Like, people are quarantined with roommates all across the country already. What's the difference if you're quarantined with your teammates? Like, I understand there's more people and everything like that, but I'm just saying, would that have helped eliminate certain situations like we're talking about?
Yeah, I think the biggest issue is that college kids are idiots. And said, okay, the dorms are going to stay open, but you have to quarantine, like, nobody would be quarantined. I certainly would not listen to that. So,
but I'm just trying to think of ways.
I got what you're saying. I talked with a bunch of coaches about this over the course of like the last 2 or 3 days. And some of them are like really concerned about their players that are back in bad situations that they were happy to get them out of. The one thing that I will say is especially from like high major programs, what I'm hearing is that a lot of them are still like paying like stipends and paying some per diem and making sure that they're actually like the money that these kids are supposed to get, like if they're on road trips or just the stipend that you get as a scholarship athlete for cost of attendance. Like that is still, some of those kids are still getting those checks and still getting that money.
At least help out some way.
Yeah. I also spoke with one coach who had a player. I'm not going to say what school it was, but he had a player that lives in New Jersey and the school is not in New Jersey. And since where he's from, like is one of the hotspots, I live in New Jersey. We're a hotspot here. They said that the kid's not going home and he stayed in his, it was an off-campus apartment. So it changes a little bit, but he stayed in his apartment. Like he didn't end up going home or traveling home. So, you know, it's tough, man. And, you know, I've one of the things I keep hearing from coaches is like what we try to do is like stay connected and give them some kind of schedule and just say like, okay, this assistant coach is assigned to these four players. This assistant coach is assigned to these four players. This assistant coach is assigned to these four players. Talk to them every day, call them every day, stay in touch every day. Keep a group text going with everybody on the team.
Right.
You know, once a week, have your team Zoom call. Once a week, have your position Zoom call. Make sure that they are like staying up on their classwork and all that kind of stuff, and try to give them a little bit of a structure and a schedule that way. But it's hard. I mean, it's hard for everyone. I guess my larger point is that I feel for some of these kids that are being sent home to a situation that is not ideal when basketball was the escape and the way for them to get out. And I'm going to be doing more reporting on this. I'm going to hopefully be able to I got a couple of leads on stuff, but I'm going to hopefully dig up a couple stories that are end up being good stories and end up being positive human interest pieces at the end of the day. So let's move on. Speaking of positive human interest pieces, let's talk about Deshaun Nix and the fact that he just got paid. What is it? $300,000 from the G League to leave UCLA. So Riggs, you knew this was coming. We all knew this was coming. What is your take? How bad does this hurt UCLA? And please explain to me why college basketball is not dead. Cause I'm pretty sure at this point, like it's gotta be on its last legs, right? It's on a ventilator. It's in a medically induced coma.
It depends. It depends what wing you're looking down. It's either on its last leg or, good riddance to these kids who don't like college and one and dones don't matter. And five stars aren't needed in college basketball. Both of those takes are idiots or are idiotic, and you're a moron if you think either way, because you're wrong, because it's in the middle, which I know is a hot take. You can say, hey, it's a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and there you go. Now, as for UCLA, it's a big loss because I really like Nix. I mean, he's a top 15 recruit for a reason, right? Like he's a good player. You do have Tiger Campbell, so you had that like kind of safety net returning back to UCLA. He was a four-star point guard that had a torn ACL going into his freshman year. He missed his true freshman year. He was a redshirted last year. It was technically his first season, you know, playing. But I don't know. Like again, Rob, this is a hot take. Give me the best talented players I can get, and let me try to figure it out. Right? Like that's how, if I was a coach, give me all the best players that I can possibly land and let me try to figure it out from there. And that's kind of where I feel with UCLA, where listen, they were a good story by the time the season was ending, right? Like they were a bubble team, maybe on the right side of the bubble, but from where they were, 8-7 when the calendar turned to where they were at the end of the season, they might return pretty much everybody. We're waiting to see what Chris Smith is the only one that has a decision left. I still don't – how can I put this correctly? I wonder how many of those close wins are wins versus luck to a degree because they won a ton of games by under single digits down this stretch here. That does mean something. You have to win games and you have to do it. But at some point, you can't win every game by 5 points. Like it's going to swing at some point. That's where somebody like a Nix comes in and just gives you that little bit of boost. Because again, you're talking about a guy who doesn't have to carry the team. He doesn't have to be the number one option, but he might be the most talented player on the floor. That's kind of the perfect mix when you're talking about a team taking a jump. So I don't know, like I'm conflicted on what I think in terms of UCLA without Knicks.
I think UCLA, especially if they get Chris Smith back, I think they're going to be, they're still a tournament team.
Yeah. So I'm not saying they aren't.
Tiger Campbell is, and for the record, like I refuse to talk about the G League, what this means for the state of college basketball, anything that has to do with the with name, image, and likeness, NIL stuff. Like I'm not, we've talked about it like three of the last four pods. My takes are out there. I'm done giving those takes. I don't want to give those takes anymore. If you want to go back and listen to the podcast that we did after Jalen Green decided to go to the G League, go listen to that. We did a good 30 minutes on everything that had like everything that you need to know about the conversation that's going on right now with Dacian Nix. You can go have and listen to that podcast, and it's all there. Just sub Dacian Nix in for Jalen Green every time you hear his name, and it's basically the same conversation. We talked about it a little bit last week too. So we're not going to have that conversation. If you want that, we've already done that. I want to talk about what's going to happen with UCLA. And like I said, I think they're still going to be a tournament team.
Right.
I think they're still in the mix, especially if they get Chris Smith back. I think they are still in the mix as a potential Big 12 title contender. Pac-12 title contender. And the reason I say that is it's twofold. One, I do think that Tiger Campbell's an effective point guard in terms of his ability to create. Like, he can't score. The guy can't shoot. He's right. A really good passer and a really good creator. He can't score. I do think that Jaime Jaca is going to end up taking the step forward. I think I love Jake Kyman as a shooter. Obviously, I love Jake Kyman. That's very on brand for me. And with
limited defense and jacking up shots.
Yeah, gotta love him. Bad hair.
All yeah, the I mean, that's the All-Star special.
Yes. And then throw in with Cody Riley and Jalen Hill, the big guys.
Cody Riley, Jalen Hill.
Yeah, the core is there, and you have to expect that these guys are going to end up taking it. Yeah, you have to expect that they're going to take a step forward in their second year under Mick Cronin, because we saw the leap that they were able to take once they started figuring things out, learning how to guard, learning what he wanted offensively. Once you saw them kind of take that leap and figure things out in the Pac-12 play, they got much, much better. Like, right. Mick Cronin is a great coach. Maybe he's not the best fit for UCLA, but he's still going to go out there and find a way to win basketball games. So I'm not that worried about them. I think they're a tournament team without Chris Smith. I think they're probably a back-end top 25 team with Chris Smith. Fun fact about Chris Smith, he is a 6'9", basically off guard that averaged 13.4 points for a team that finished second in the Pac-12 last season. And he is younger than Cassius Stanley. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
He's 4 months younger than Cassius Stanley.
He's interesting.
Chris Smith turned 20 years old on December 24th. Cassius Stanley turned 20 years old on August 18th.
Chris Smith is going to be a senior.
Chris Smith is going to be a senior if he comes back. Cassius Stanley is a one-and-done freshman, and he is older than Chris Smith. I thought that was a fun fact.
That's a really good stat.
Yeah, so Chris Smith is very, very young for his age. So I would not be surprised to see him end up leaving, because I think that he's a little bit of a sneaky good NBA prospect. So I think he's the kind of guy that could be in that, like, maybe the second round. Two-way type deal. And you know what, Reeves? He is specifically the kind of guy, like, he's in that Tyshawn Alexander conversation that could change a basketball team's fortunes if you could find a way for him to be able to come back to school. And you know what? They have there's a meeting tomorrow, a conference call tomorrow about trying to get the NCAA to pass these name, image, and likeness rights. And yeah. They probably need to do that so we can keep guys like Chris Smith around. And you know what the fallout's going to be? You're more likely to keep guys like Dacian Nix around. The thing, not having Nix, and tell me what you think about this. Not having Nix, I think, just lowers their ceiling. Like, 100%. They don't, even with Chris Smith back, like, I think Dacian Nix, I also think he's a little bit limited. Like, he's not a great scorer. He's not a high level, like, well, he's a high level athlete, but he's not like an explosive athlete. He's not that kind of, like, he's not John Wall.
Right.
He is a guy that's known for, like, his passing ability, his creativity, and the fact that he's a 6'5" point guard more than he is the fact that he's going to be a great scorer. So he's basically like Tiger Campbell just turned into an NBA prospect. if that makes sense.
You then give Mick Cronin all that size on the defensive side of the ball.
Oh, no. I agree.
No, and I'm just saying that's one of the things that you're really missing out on, because yes. Tiger Campbell is as tall as me, and I'm 5'9".
On a good day. Right. And like that, Johnny Juzang too, I think, are they still trying to get the waiver? Is that
still a thing? They're still trying to get a waiver. That could help too. But the other thing is you just don't, you have David Singleton, but like you don't have that two point guard set. You don't have two true point guards. Now you're relying even more on Tiger Campbell. And again, like I'm not going to sit here and say he's injury prone or anything like that, but the dude is had a torn ACL a year ago. It's not like, and I know that you can say this about anybody, but even more when you have this torn ACL and the way that kind of Campbell plays, all it takes is a wrong step. And then what? You literally don't have a lead guard.
Yeah, that would be really bad. And it would be really nice to have that insurance with Deshaun Nix around. But he's not going to be there. So I think, I just think it doesn't take away from how good that team is. It just lowers their ceiling of how good they can be and the likelihood that they end up being special, if that makes sense.
Well, then
like the difference
it's the between... perfect fit. Like I said, where Nix isn't a guy that can carry a team, right? Like that's not his MO, but you surround him with Chris Smith and all this talent kind of around him. Let's say they get Juzang eligible. And then that's the key, right? Like that's where you see a guy like Nix probably, you know, stay at his same lottery, you know, selection pick, and UCLA becomes a top 20 team versus a back end top 25 team.
Yeah, I had them 15th, assuming that Nix was going to be there. I'll probably have them. I haven't decided if I want to have them like 24th, 25th,
like 23,
or
something like that,
or like one of the teams, like one of the first five. But they're going to be in that. Like the definition of borderline top 25 is if you can't decide if you want to have them be like 23rd or 28th.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the range that I think that they're going to be in without Nix. The one thing that I do want to say is, though, I think that it's the one thing that's interesting is that the G League went out and went after a kid that was already committed to a program. And it's not something that we've seen before. It's not something that was understood that they were going to be targeting. I believe it was in October of 2018, the G League spoke with ESPN and basically said, we're not targeting kids that have committed to a college. Like we're targeting the kids that don't want to go to college. This right here is a directly in conflict with that. And I think it's probably worth noting that Isaiah Todd was also committed to Michigan, right?
But then he decommitted. At least there was a decommitment period, right? Like there was a few days of decommitted. Obviously, they go hand in hand, but they're at least. The visual is there. Well, he was decommitted for 10 days.
And there was a reason that he was whatever. The point is that they are starting to go after guys. Again, they went after Terrence Clark at Kentucky. So they're starting to go after guys that are actually committed to a college instead of just going after the high school kids, which I do think is something that is going to rankle some feathers. I can't imagine that college basketball coaches are going to be happy about not only having to recruit against, other programs and not only going to have to try to keep everyone there, but now it's like, hey, you know what? We also have to recruit against this $300,000 offer from the G League. I'm sure that that's not going to make their life all that much easier, but it is definitely something that is going to happen and may be a little bit different than what we expected when the G League first started talking about putting this program together. We probably should mention Greg Brown at this point, right? Going to Texas.
Yeah, that was, I guess that happened over the weekend. Days don't matter. Great get for Texas. We talked about Texas at length, I don't know, at some point in the year of 2020. But this is I tweeted it on Friday. It's this simple. It's a do or die year for Shaka Smart. There is no excuse for him not to be successful at Texas if, and the way it looks like, everybody's returning and you add Greg Brown.
So I have an excuse for him to not be good. Maybe not an excuse, but a reason.
Coronavirus. So,
no, well, yeah, that too. But
that's what I thought you were going to say.
No. Yeah, he was Riggs. You went there, Riggs. So the thing is, when they made their run at the end of the season, if you talk to people kind of around that program, one of the things you kept hearing was that part of the reason they were able to kind of come together and make that push is that so many kids got injured.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they were down to like an 8-man rotation instead of having 12 guys that deserve to play. And it's a lot easier to keep players bought in and playing hard and everyone together and everyone in the program backing each other up and kind of create that kind of like whatever, the camaraderie, the team unity.
Well, everyone's happy when you're playing 25 minutes a game.
Yes, it's a lot easier to do that when you only have 8 guys. Like there's a reason why Jay Wright will never have more than like 10 players on scholarship, and he always wants one or two of those. If he has 10 or 11, he wants like one or two redshirting.
Yep.
Specifically for that reason. It is like in college basketball, you don't like if you only have 7 scholarship players, you're just fine. Like you might have a little bit of trouble putting together like 5-on-5 in practice, but it's great when you get to a game. Yeah. Like you're better off having 6 or 7 guys that really deserve minutes that are in the conversation for being a starter than you are 9 or 10.
Yeah, like I said, I've said it before, 8's the perfect number. Like that's, if I'm a coach, that's what I want. Depth is the most overused term, I think, from a fan base perspective. Depth is a backup guard, a backup big, and a wing that can play multiple positions. That's depth.
Yes, and that's really what you want. The problem is with Texas is they now have they're basically going to be 13 deep because they bring 12 guys back that all like played rotational minutes. Some of them played at different points in time, but 11 of the 12 guys on their roster that are coming back started a game. 11 of the 12 guys started at least one game. And like, so Kai Jones was the guy that kind of broke out a little bit at the end of the season, but he only played 27 games. He didn't really play early on in the season. Donovan Williams looked like a guy that was going to end up being a really good player as things kind of went along. But he was kind of stuck behind Gerald Liddell early on in the season, right? You had Jericho Sims was like the focal point for everything offensively at the 5. But then towards the end of the year, like Will Baker started coming along a little bit. Royce Ham started coming along a little bit. And now you're in the situation where now you have all of these guys. And especially in the front court, you have all of these big guys.
A lot of bigs.
Greg Brown is coming there, and he's going to step in and take 25 or 30 minutes right off the bat. And you have all of these guys and 13 players that are going to deserve minutes, and you're only going to have 200 minutes to go around, 5 spots on the floor. Like, how are you going to make this all work? And when it comes to Shaka and it comes to Texas, I've made this point before, but I really do think that Shaka is at his best and will have the most success at a program if he kind of takes a step down from a school that is recruiting the likes of Greg Browns and recruiting the likes of Andrew Jones and recruiting the likes of these guys that are kind of expecting to be developed in the pros, and instead goes to a place where you can get guys for 3 or 4 years and really get them to buy in and create that kind of havoc atmosphere. You don't have to play that style, but it's what he turned that program into, the family unit, the fact that these guys were best friends and ready to fight for each other every single second of every single day, regardless of how many minutes that they were getting. I don't know if you can build that at a place where everyone has an eye on the next level, if that makes sense. And I think that the evidence is that it didn't necessarily work for Texas last year because they didn't get good until they only had 8 guys that were available to play. So, I will be very, very interested to see how Shaka Smart deals with all of that, because it is not going to be fun trying to tell guys that by the end of the year we're starting that, hey, you know what? You're going back to playing the same kind of minutes that a walk-on did.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
Good luck with that, Shaka.
I guess the reason I said it the way I did is I'm putting myself more in that Texas fan base perspective and the casual fan perspective of, hey, we're – how long into this Shaka Smart experiment are we going? This is the roster of where he has depth, like everyone likes to bring up. You gotta be somewhat successful.
Yeah, I mean, look, 3 weeks left in the season, everybody had fired him. Yeah. Like everybody had said, like, oh, he's gone, and like he started writing the columns of like, how will John Beilein fit at the University of Texas? How will Chris Beard, how is Texas going to be able to pay Shaka Smart's buyout and Chris Beard's buyout? How is this all going to end up working? And you know what? He ended up winning 5 of his last 6 games. He got himself in the position where I don't think he would have made the NCAA tournament. I think he had to beat Texas Tech in the first round of the Big 12 tournament.
It would have been interesting, though.
But the fact that he got that close basically saved his job and is the reason why he'll be coming back for next season. Speaking of guys that got fired, and actually this is a great segue because one of the soft landings landing spots that we had all picked out for Shaka Smart was Wake Forest. And Wake Forest made the decision in the middle of a pandemic to spend $15 million to get rid of Danny Manning. How bad do you think you want to get rid of someone if you're willing to spend $15 million to get rid of them in the middle of a pandemic?
Well, if you ask my father, the Wake Forest graduate, he was more than willing to steal $15 million to get rid of Danny Manning.
We really, you know what? We really, really fucked up not getting him on the podcast.
Oh, he would have, he had takes.
Man. But we're gonna have to get Papa Regan on the podcast at some point.
He's dying for Wake Forest just to be relevant again in basketball. He's so miserable.
I'll tell you, like, what, I grew up, Wes Miller or Steve Forbes are definitely going to be relevant.
I grew up a Wake Forest fan because that's what I knew. That's from my.
That's
pops.
Why you have a hard on for Randolph Childress.
Yeah, well,
Randolph Childress, now the interim head coach. By the way, how excited are you about that?
Hey, if I am on Wake Forest coaching search or coaching committee, search committee, I should say, I am hiring co-head coaches Tim Duncan and Randolph Childress and making them coach in full 90s jerseys. Good luck recruiting against that.
Wake Forest really did, like, low-key have great uniforms back in the day.
They had the best uniforms back in the day. But here's the thing. Like, Wake, it's very interesting to me to watch how this is all developing. Take out the pandemic and the timing and that, but just the fact that Wake does have such a decent historical background, right? Like, they have a ton of NBA talent. They have faces like Chris Paul and Tim Duncan. They've had success not that long ago. When you look at what Dino when Skip Prosser to Dino Gaudio, I know Dino Gaudio's team fell apart, but they were a 4 seed when they lost to Cleveland State and Norris Cole. There is enough recent success that Wake Forest should not be what Wake Forest is present day. And, like, just what I mean is just the worst team in the ACC year after year. Like, that that should not be happening. That's why this coaching search is so important. I thought it was smart that they the story got out to Evan Daniels about John Beilein was not on the list. Just makes too much sense not to hire him. A, you just paid Danny Manning $15 million. Beilein was making like $3.5 million a year at Michigan. You probably have to pay him what, $4 million a year or so at Wake Forest.
There's no way that they're going to be able to afford that.
And he's 67.
They would be spending $9 million a year basically on basketball coaches. Wake Forest cannot afford to pay that.
And he's 67 years old.
Yeah. Not with, like, the wildest part about this, I don't mean to cut you off, but, like, they got to spend all this money for the buyout when they're, like, the revenue that they're getting from NCAA tournament stuff is going to be lower, from college football stuff coming in. Like, they don't know. The Wake Forest athletic department does not know if they're going to be able to have fans at their football games. And I don't know if that matters for Wake Forest, because I don't know.
Like, they make a bowl game every year, so that does matter. Like, that's millions of dollars.
Yeah, so, like, that's a lot of money is not coming into the athletic department that they maybe thought was going to be coming back into the athletic department before they made the decision to fire everybody. So, yes, it says a lot. And I am kind of curious. I don't know if I – like, I don't have an answer for this. But I don't know how it'll be very interesting to me if I can lock down where that money came from.
Yeah, I think everybody knows it didn't come straight from the school.
So let me budget, ask you this.
But this is where, like, you just have to do anything possible to get Wes Miller.
You think?
It makes too much sense in the world. His dad is a trustee, name on the practice facility. I do think Wes Miller needs a job like Wake Forest if he eventually wants to take over at North Carolina, where he played. I'm not saying he needs Wake Forest, like, specifically. He needs a job like Wake Forest.
So that's why I would ask, if you are Wake Forest, do you want to hire a guy that you know you are hiring to basically develop into the next head coach at the University of North Carolina?
Yes, because I take my chances. What if he loves Wake Forest so much and has so much success there, he goes, you know, I had my time at Carolina, I'm going to stay at Wake Forest. Let's say, what if Roy coaches for another 10 years?
That is a very, like, significant possibility.
Right. So it's like, okay, well, what if you make a Final Four at Wake Forest in that time in the 10 years? Or a title game? Or, you know, or consistent success like this, where you're, you know, back to the Skip Prosser era, where you're making Sweet 16s, you're a favorite to get to the Final Four. Okay, I can build something here. And then I think if you're a Wake Forest fan, like, it would suck, but you take that 10-year stretch of getting back to being Wake Forest if he ends up going to Carolina. What if Carolina goes, we're going to hand it over to Hubert Davis? Right? Like, there's a lot of what ifs.
That would not be a smart decision.
No, it wouldn't, but...
That's just my take.
I agree, but I'm just saying, like, there's all these what ifs that could happen where Wes Miller doesn't end up at Carolina.
Yeah, no, I hear you. It's just something, like, I've heard it brought up. I think I tend to agree with you in that situation, but I don't really have a hard and fast take either way. Although I do think that Steve Forbes would absolutely kill it there.
Forbes would be great there too. Like if Miller turns him down, or if you decide to go Forbes, there would be a little backlash just because I think a lot of Wake Forest fans are set on Wes Miller. But Forbes is a hell of a coach.
If you're,
and he's only 55.
Yeah, he looks a lot older than that.
I know. That's I literally looked it up on Saturday.
I've told him that too. He looks way older.
I did not think he was only 55.
So the thing about the situation that Wake Forest is in, what makes it so interesting is that, like, in a typical year, you would have to be battling like 4, 5, 6 different high majors to be able to go out and get guys like this, right? And if it costs you, like, if you're Wake Forest, you kind of have to know what you are at a point too, right? You know that you are not going to be beating like the University of Texas out for a coaching candidate. You're not going to be beating like Florida out for a coaching candidate. You're not going to be beating a lot of schools that kind of had the same level of expectation and the same level of historical success, at least not right now. Like you're not going to go and take the fourth best job in the state of North Carolina when you can go and get the best job in the state of Texas or the best job in the state of Florida. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. So I think you kind of have to have that in mind when you're making these decisions. So I do think it's worth that extra $3 million in buyout money to be able to say, okay, now we can go out and try to get one of the very best mid-major coaches in all of college basketball, guys that we think – that everybody in the industry thinks are going to end up being stars at the high major level at some point, we can get them without competition. I don't want to speak for Forbes, and I don't want to put words in his mouth and say that he would take Wake Forest like in a heartbeat, but I do think that he is ready to try to go to the high major level. And I would not be shocked to see him take a high, like whatever high major job comes along.
I mean, we talked about connecting what we've talked about. If Texas was able to lure Bruce Pearl, one of the first names that we'd linked to Auburn was Steve Forbes.
Yeah.
And that's kind of similar to Wake Forest.
The one concern I do have about Forbes at Wake Forest is I do kind of feel like he is a guy that needs to be at a program where you can kind of like JUCO it up a little bit and thrive a little bit on transfers. And I do think that Wake Forest is a little bit of a better academic institution than some of those programs. So I do worry a little bit about that, but also like, I think Steve Forbes is just a very, very good basketball coach. Same with Wes Miller. Wes Miller is like both. If Wake Forest can get one of those two, like
it's great.
There's no bad option with those two.
No.
Does that make sense?
To me, like there are four people on the short list. If they go off these four without a surprise, then I think they failed. It's those two. Pat Kelsey, I threw on there just because I understand it, but I'd be hesitant to hire Kelsey with the UMass situation and everything like that.
I was like that too.
I can understand if you're like, well, let's offer it to this guy first.
Yeah. I also think that the other two guys are better basketball
coaches. No, I agree. But I'm saying like,
that's not a Pat Kelsey. He's very good, but right. I think I would take those other two guys over.
But I'm saying if they say no, like Forbes and Miller say no, then it's Kelsey. And honestly, Randolph Childress, I would give him a chance because he's cheap, and right now that's part of what you need.
Two other names that I've heard kind of in the mix, Bob Ritchie from Furman and Earl Grant from Charleston. But then they're all like,
yeah,
Wake Forest very much has like a type that they want. Like they definitely have a type.
Southern,
very good mid-major coaches that have done well in the mid-Atlantic region.
Right. And it makes sense. Like, they've had a ton of success with that. Like, when they hired Skip Prosser, he was at Xavier from a mid-major time at the time. Dave Odom. Like, they've had this kind of success of guys of having a type, I should say.
Yeah. One thing I do want to note before we move on to our draft is that you mentioned Dino Gaudio. And when he was fired by Wake Forest, it was a little bit of a controversy. And it was a little bit questionable because, like, in 2009, they were number one in the country. And he was fired a year later. But
because they fell apart at the end every year.
Yeah, and there was a reason for that. And from what I've been told is that he was not the easiest guy to play for or to work for when it came to being a head coach. So part of the reason that they made the change, it had less to do with coaching acumen and more to do with
player happiness type deal.
Work environment. Yep. That's
why I say Skip Prosser's death is one of the biggest what ifs in college basketball. I firmly believe he wins a title at Wake Forest.
I don't know if he wins a title, but I definitely think that they are they're not this Wake Forest right now.
The way he had that rolling, the way he was recruiting, I think that Prosser gets one title at Wake Forest.
I mean, it's
obviously shooting for the stars at that, but yes.
I would not be shocked. They would be much better. I'll tell you, for sure. Let's put it like this. They would absolutely be in the mix at least every other year.
Right, right.
You know, like, we'd be having conversation the same way that we talk about, like, I don't know, like, Villanova all the time. Like, yeah, you know, they're not going to win, but like they'll be good. They'll be in the mix. It's Villanova. Same way we say, like,
Oregon.
Like, maybe they're not going to be great. Maybe they're not going to be the top 25 this year, but they're Oregon. They're in the mix. They'll figure it out. They'll put it together. They'll find a way.
Or they make it as a 12 seed and make the Sweet 16.
Yeah. Like, that's the kind of thing that we'd be. Okay. We're on the same page then. Right. All right. So now we're going to do our draft because it's mock draft season. It's always mock draft season. And even though the NFL draft just passed, which, by the way, like, that was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
You enjoy that? The way that they had it set up?
I did.
I think we should do this every year now.
Except for the Goodell shtick. I didn't need him like fake pumping up a TV screen.
Yeah. I could do without Roger Goodell at all points in my life the rest of time. But what we're going to do for our draft this week is we're drafting things that we are going to do as soon as coronation comes to an end. And I'm going to allow you to go first. Do you want to go first?
Yeah,
we're going to do 1-2-1-1-1 and then alternate like that. Okay. So you want to go first? You want to take the first pick? You want a second pick?
I'll take the first pick.
All right, go ahead.
So the broad thing I'm going to do is get a haircut and my beard shaped up. But what I'm really going to do is put racing stripes in my hair, maybe do like a number in the back of my head shaved into it, and do something crazy with the facial hair because I haven't shaved in 45 days.
So you pulled my whole salon trip.
I'm going back to the 90s. I've been on a 90s kick.
I mean, since you're basically a kid, all you do is play video games and eat mac and cheese for breakfast.
That's what I'm saying.
I'd as well get racing stripes on the side. By the way, I gave my son a haircut the other day.
That's bad.
It actually came up pretty well. Because I shaved it high and tight. I got the hard part cut in there. I combed it over to the side. I faded it up a little bit on the other side. Like, I actually did a pretty good job. He looks pretty good.
I was texting with Robbie Hummel over the weekend, and he was like, yeah, I let my girlfriend cut my hair. And I was like, he's like, that was a mistake. He goes, the problem was she did it before the quarantine and got cocky because it looked good. He's like, doesn't look great. I was like, Robbie, that's not great.
Well, that's bad because, like, Robbie has bad hair as it is. Like, he's not. Like, we're not talking about Steve Lavin here.
Right.
We're talking about Robbie Hummel.
I think, so, I might just put my Twitter name just like shaved into the back of my head. So I'm just a walking billboard at all times.
I just can't get over the fact that, like, Robbie Hummel goes on TV with the haircut that he has. And now he's looking in the mirror like, oh man, she messed up my hair. Like, how bad can it be? Like, we got to get a picture of this because it has to be horrible.
He tweeted out, which made me text him. I was just like, yo, you can't be serious. So he tweeted out, you never know true fear until your girlfriend finishes cutting your hair and says, quote, I really think you'll like this in two or three days. Which is just a phenomenal tweet, by the way.
Oh, man. Yeah. Poor Robbie Hummel. All right. So do I get two picks now?
Yeah, you have two.
So the first thing that I'm going with is the first thing I'm going to do as soon as Coronacation ends is go to the first sporting event that I can possibly go to. I don't care what it is.
Doesn't matter.
I will go watch like a men's league indoor hockey game. Like I'm going to the first possible sporting event I can go to.
Especially
if I can gamble on it. Like, right. I'm 100% going there. And then the second thing I'm going to do is after that game, I am going to go belly up to a bar somewhere.
Yeah.
Anywhere. Belly up to a bar, order a beer and a shot, and just get like a massive plate of whatever like the best bar food that bar is. But I'm going to go belly up at a bar somewhere.
So my pick is a specific bar. I'm going patio bar. I'm sitting on a patio with a bucket of beer, a plate of nachos, or a plate of wings. Maybe have my dog and just sit around with my buddies and just get obliterated on a Saturday.
Yeah, I'm in there. All right, so the next thing that I have written down is I am going to go to like a fine dining, like experience type restaurant. The kind of place where you go and you get like, you get like six or seven courses and the chef like tells you all these different things and it all has wine pairings. And I'm just going to like, going all out, like the nicest dining experience I can possibly find. I am going to go do that because anything to, especially if like they will get me drunk while I'm there.
Yep.
Like that is everything here is going to like revolve around
drink
alcohol. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. So I'm going to go find the nicest, most expensive, the best fine dining experience that I can find. And I'm going to go do that. That's number three on my list.
All right, you ready for my number three? You're gonna be shocked by this one.
Okay, hit me up.
I'm gonna get sick. Everyone's going out the first week. I'm staying home with a little bit of tummy flu. Gonna get a little tight, gonna get a little bit more in shape, but come out not looking so quarantine seasoned. Week two, I'm going out and I'm looking a little bit better than everyone else. And everyone will feel like I can just be left alone for one more week. Wife can go out, kid can go out. I'm sick on the stomach.
That's the worst thing I've ever heard in my life. That's the worst idea. That's the worst draft pick in the history of draft picks. You know what that was? That was Darko Milicic right there. That was Ryan Leaf. You just picked Ryan Leaf.
Just wait. When I'm sitting at home with my wife and kid out and I'm just enjoying Home Alone by myself.
All right. So number four on my list is Little League coaching. I signed up to be my son's Little League coach. And
baseball, I'm assuming you mean when you say Little League. Yeah.
What else?
I've had people.
What else could Little League be? Like,
I know. I've had people.
What do you think I'm talking about?
I've had people say Little League. I've had people say Little League, and it's just like their broad definition of any sport. And I'm like, no, like Little League is Little League baseball.
Whoever said that is a terrorist.
Right. Yeah. I know. Trust me. Like, I don't like them.
I can't believe you just said Little League. You mean baseball?
I'm just confirming.
Well, technically, it's going to be T-ball.
Because right.
And it's based
on. Oh, I wish it was coach pitch. So you just being a kid when you get pissed off.
I wish.
Because that's the first thing that you should have drafted.
I'm a bad enough pitcher that like I can just do it and yeah.
And you get a bad beat. You find out in between innings.
Yeah. It's like fuck this kid. Boom. As an aside, like that was the reason why I quit baseball. I was actually kind of good at baseball.
Same. My mom thought that was my best sport.
And when I still remember the kid's name. His name was Ed Prokop. And he hit his growth spurt. Like when we were, he was a senior in high school when I was a freshman in high school. And he was a center on our basketball team. He was 6'5". And when I got moved up to, I think it was like we had, it went like whatever, like the lowest, you had the starter thing and you had minors and then you had the majors. And I got moved up to the majors when I was 9 years old. And I was like, it was basically like 10 to 12 year olds in that level. Yep. And I was nine and I got moved up to it. And it was the player pitch. It was the first time when it was like players pitched, solely players pitched. And Ed Prokop, first game, goes to the mound. First pitch that I see, he just drills me straight in the ankle. And I'm like, oh man, that really hurt. So I go to first base. My second at bat, he drills me like straight in the hip on like the second pitch that I see. So I'm first game ever at the majors level, get drilled in the ankle, get drilled in the hip, and like two of the first three pitches that I ever see at that level. And then like the next time I come up, like I'm standing on the outside of the batter's box and like I don't even swing. And that was it. That was the end of my baseball career. That game right there.
I said same thing.
I still remember he had like the orange Max Sinaway t-shirt on.
I got called up.
Ed Prokop. Kiss my ass.
I got called up like a grade early. Same thing. Like I was 9, got called up to 10 to 12. My neighbor or my parents' neighbor growing up was my coach and one of like the organizers of the league. And he says to this day, I still hold the record for most hit by pitches because I was their leadoff hitter and I was fast. So like he would literally tell me to get as close to the plate as possible. I would get beamed like 2 times a game and then steal second right away. So that was my offensive strategy in baseball.
All right. So what's your fourth one?
I am going to the beach. I had 2 beach trips planned. I was supposed to see you on one of them. They're both now obviously canceled. My parents live in Charleston. I'm going to a beach and I'm going to eat no less than 1,000 oysters.
Yeah, that was going to be my last one. Is the beach trip.
Yeah.
So you know what that opens up for me? What you left on the table? The casino, baby.
I had that one listed.
I'm going to go play too much blackjack. I'm going to go sit down and play like 1-2 no limit hold'em, something like way out of my price range. I'm going to
walk around holding chips.
I can't wait to like just go have thousands of dollars in chips. And then I'll go and sit at like the $5 blackjack table anyway.
And get nervous.
Whatever, man. Yeah, get nervous. I can't, like, that's all I want to do is I want to go to the casino and have that rush when you're like, oh, this is too much money. This is way too much money. Please don't lose it. Please don't lose it. I can't go back to the ATM. Don't do it. Yeah. Okay. So what's your last one?
I'm going to play Jim Boeheim one-on-one.
All right. I think that's a great way to wrap this podcast right there. As always, please rate, review, subscribe to this podcast. Oh, you know what we forgot? It's Craft Beer Cast.
Oh, yeah.
What you got?
A local one. Carrickins, Citra, IPA. Really good. They make their own liquor, their own beer, and their own equivalent to like White Claws.
You said Citra IPA.
It's named Citra. It's just called an IPA, yeah.
Is it a citrus IPA?
It's not citrus. Like it's not heavily citrus.
I feel like I don't even know you anymore.
It's good.
So I have so this beer gives me PTSD.
No, those are always fun.
Can I tell you why?
Yeah.
Because the night before the NCAA tournament was canceled, I went out and I bought a 6-pack of resin. Do you know what resin is? It is Six Point Brewery's DIPA.
Okay.
Actually, I think it's actually just a regular IPA. No, it's an Imperial. So it's an Imperial IPA. It's not a double. It's an Imperial. I don't know what the difference is. Someone does. Some beer nerd is going to tell us this. Please, I actually want to know. Like, if you know the difference between a double and an Imperial and a triple and whatever, please explain it to me. Don't Google it. I see you Googling it.
I am.
So Six Point is from Brooklyn. Their resin IPA is my favorite one that they have. And I bought this before... like 2 nights before driving up to Stanford for the whole NBCSN studio thing that I was going to do. I wanted it for when I got back for Selection Sunday, just to have it in the fridge. And so tournament was canceled. I think it was that Monday night. I went out and I simulated an entire NCAA tournament based off of what our most recent bracket was. And while I was doing that,
I was drinking
So every time I open a bottle or a can of resin now, I sit there and think about, hey, this reminds me of the time that the NCAA tournament didn't happen and ruined my life.
Yeah, that was fun times. Can't wait to see what gets canceled tomorrow.
we'll see. hopefully this podcast gets canceled.
Yeah, might.
As always, please rate, review, subscribe to this podcast. We are going to be doing Stephen Curry's Elite Eight loss to Kansas in the 2008 NCAA tournament for the next Run It Back podcast. If you want to hear us do a specific game, please leave 5 stars, say something nice about us in the comments, and request the game that you want to hear us do a Run It Back podcast on. As soon as you finish doing all of that, go and subscribe to the Fundamentally Sound podcast. Rate that, review that, tell Riggs that he is finally a Big J journalist for scooping Shams Charania on the Dacian Knicks news today. Riggs, catch up on Thursday night, and we're going to record Thursday. We're going to back Thursday.